Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Person has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore.
Oh! Big stop!
Oh!
No, brother!
Lead Toledo, Artis. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast at HarvardParoxysm.com. I am Jason Mann, and joining me today to talk about Manu Ginobili is Miles Ma. He's a contributor for Harvard Paroxysm. Miles, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Going well. Thanks so much for being here, and looking forward to talking about Manu. Looking at kind of the basic resume, he is 86th all-time in win shares, 20th in win shares per 48, 13th in box score plus minus, 41st in value over replacement player. He has, of course, been a key contributor to four Spurs championships, the Tim Duncan-led dynasty. Two-time All-NBA third team. He has five seasons where he's in top 10 in the league and win shares per 48. But because he plays relatively few minutes, he has never been in the top 10 in win shares itself. He is a four times in that category, top 10 in value over replacement player. And we've started looking at how other ranking systems have looked at these players, and Bill Simmons' pyramid, he is not listed. However, he is 143rd on the Slam Magazine 500. So, Miles, you chose Manu Ginobili. What do you think about his case as a top 50 player?
Emmanuel David Ginobili. Did you know his middle name was David? Middle name is David.
Nice. I did not know that.
So I guess the big mark against Ginobili is his minutes, because he has not been a starter for most of his career. But I think he has so many accomplishments outside of the NBA, and he's such a distinctive player that you have to give him. So if there are style points, you have to give him all of the style points. I think. Let's get like the boring things out of the way, like the things that are obviously at the top of his resume. He's one of two guys to win a EuroLeague title, an NBA championship, and an Olympic gold medal. The only other one is Bill Bradley, and I feel like you have to give him even more credit because he beat America to get there in 2004. And you could say whatever you want about that U.S. Olympic team, but it had Allen Iverson, it had Dwayne Wade, it had Tim Duncan, and he killed them in that semifinal game. He had 29 points on 13 shots. So this guy is a killer at the highest level of competition. The other thing that I think is cool about Manu is that he's got to be the best player ever taken 57th. There's not, you know, to be even considered in the top 50 all time is remarkable for a guy picked out low. I forget what the trade was. I think the Pistons were involved this summer, and they got a top 55 protected pick. And, you know, that's basically nothing, right? There's only two guys with more win shares who were drafted that low. Artis Gilmore, who was taken in the seventh round, 117th overall in 1971. And Bill Laimbeer, who was taken in the third round, 65th overall in 1979. And then there's Manu, taken 57th. The only other notables who were taken that low or lower are like Arvydas Sabonis in 85. But yeah, most of the time that pick is traded for nothing. You mentioned the four championships. I think he was part of the Tim Duncan, you know, dynasty. And that's sort of I guess that's one of the marks against him, is that he's always been on great teams. He's never had to be a leader. But I think, you know, for a lot of those championships, for at least the 2004-2005 championship, and I thought he was the best player in that series, but nobody watched it because it was against the Pistons. Did you watch that series?
I did, as a matter of fact, yes.
Okay. What was it? It was like one of the lowest rated, the least watched NBA finals in recent history, if I recall correctly.
That was the first finals in which I got back into basketball after taking a few years off from the NBA.
Was it that finals in particular that made you want to jump back in?
No, it was that season, though, because I had moved to Atlanta, and I decided that I wanted to become a Hawks fan. So
okay.
I rooted very hard for a 13-win Hawks team that season. So the finals was my reward. It was a good finals, even though
– It was a good – it went to seven games, right?
Yeah.
And if you recall, in that seventh game, he iced that game. He was pretty incredible, and he was doing it against Tayshaun Prince, who I know you weren't watching basketball the year before, but that was the guy who locked down Kobe the year before,
right?
And he killed him. So like it just seems like he comes up in these big moments. I love him because he's a fearless player, and he's just so aggressive. Like you have no idea what he's gonna do when he's on the floor. Except, you know, he's going to get that basket. I want to talk about, well, let me go back. I remember I didn't pay much attention to Manu Ginobili until, do you remember Kobe Doing Work?
Yes.
That documentary?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, it's the documentary where it's just one game focused on Kobe Bryant. And I remember they were playing the Spurs that game. Manu Ginobili was not playing, and then it was like a shot of him on the bench, and Kobe just said, "That's a bad boy right there." I think I'm pretty sure those were his exact words, and I remember hearing that and going like, "Manu Ginobili, really?" So after that, I started paying attention to him, and it's true, Manu Ginobili. Anything he did, I was like, "He is a bad boy." I didn't say bad boy because I feel like that's a lame thing to say, Kobe. But I thought, you know, this is a bad man. So style points wise, I think he's super cool. Like obviously the Euro step, right? Who does
sure.
the Euro step? Before Manu Ginobili, I'm sure people did the Euro step, but now, you know, there's Dwayne Wade, there's James Harden. It's such a weapon for everyone, the Euro step. So
yeah.
We have to give him credit for introducing that. We have to give him credit for sort of inventing James Harden, right? He shoots the three. He's left-handed, he's always going for the basket, and he's a great passer. I think, you know, James Harden's game is almost the same. He's just sort of built on it and added that filthy step back that he has.
Yeah. I mean, just incredibly innovative when it comes to ball handling and passing. And it just, like, the word that always comes to me for him is crafty.
Right.
I mean, he's just able to and able to often, you know, kind of make something out of nothing. And of course, you know, just able to key, you know, for a team that already has so much, but is able to kind of fill in those parts and also able to, you know, provide a spark when needed or just kind of fit in when needed.
Right. He added that sense of like back when the Spurs used to be regarded as boring, he added that sense of unpredictability. And a lot of that was his pass, like almost any top 10, like you pick the top 10 passes of the year for almost any season that he's played, he's got two or three on that list. And you're probably thinking of one right now, but he's so, basketball to me is about decisions. And the thing that I think sets Manu apart is that he makes decisions so, so fast. Like he seems to know exactly where everybody's going to be on the floor and what he's going to do just a split second before everyone else. And, you know, there's times like he's definitely an up and down player. You know, he makes these decisions quickly and they don't always work, but a lot of the times they're the best play of the game. Right. I'm thinking right now to the 2014 finals and that crazy, crazy dunk on the entire Miami Heat team. I think that is, I think that even though he's a little bit old and washed up now, I think that's kind of the play of his career, because it was so unexpected, it was so fearless, and it was such a spectacular play. He yammed it on the entire, he dribbled through the entire Miami Heat team and just yammed it on Chris Bosh's head. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. But I think that's his mark, right? His fearlessness.
Yeah, I remember we did a series on Game 7s in the finals, mm-hmm. and looking back at the Pistons one, in fact, in 05, of just like how just to see him do that stuff more often, and just to kind of remember, like, oh yeah, I mean, you know, he's still, you know, he's been great over the, you know, he's slowing down now, but he's still been,
right,
you know, great player the last 6-7 years. But I mean, he used to do that stuff, like, you know, more commonly, and it's just like, oh wow, yeah, that's right. He was that quick, and he was that, you know, that spry, and he had that kind of lift, and
Had the long hair,
right? Yeah, that too. Yeah, the hair flopping. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, you know, to me, you know, there's, because, you know, we go back to the longevity a little bit, or not so much the longevity, but the lack of minutes. I mean, he's averaged 26.7 minutes per game in his career, and it's tough to be an elite player when doing that. But there is one pretty good parallel for him. A guy who's currently on the top 50 list and we think is very likely to stay on there is Sam Jones of the Celtics dynasty.
Okay.
I mean, they played similar minutes, they played similar roles, and they produced at similar rates. Manu has the benefit of the three-pointer, of course, and of, you know, kind of the modern emphasis on efficiency. Sam Jones, like everyone, shot the ball without much care. But you know, I do think that there is a player who, you know, is a template for, you know, for putting Manu in there. I do think that he is I do think he's definitely a candidate, for sure.
Right.
You know, you look at kind of the comparison, you kind of where he's rated, you know, when it comes to other guards of his era, you know, he's fifth in value of replacement player next to, you know, Chris Paul, Kobe, Wade, and Kidd. Third in Winchester 48 behind Paul and Harden. So, you know, he's with these elite players on these things.
Right.
You know, even all time, I mean, he's eighth in Winchester 48 behind Jordan, Paul, Magic, Jerry West, John Stockton, James
Is
Harden.
Is this just among guards?
Oscar Robertson, among guards, yes.
Okay.
In his position. So, and, you know, in all time, I mean, you know, he's 20th all time in Winchester 48. Which is an incredible mark.
Right. Well, like, when he's on the floor, he's as good as anybody.
Yeah.
He just, you know, he just happens to not be on the floor that much. You know, it's interesting to think about what he could have been if he had, you know, had that starring role. He sort of did on those Argentina teams, but you know, you didn't get to see him that much.
Yeah, we haven't exactly decided yet, you know, how we're going to weigh international play, because it's, you know, I mean, as you've mentioned, it's definitely, you know, the highest level of competition, and you know,
right. To me, I think it's probably more impressive than maybe winning a Final Four. But
we
could debate that. That's up for debate, I guess.
Oh yeah, I mean, I would say so. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it, you know, it's you know, I think there is, but it's still kind of hard to, you know, exactly know what weight to put on it. Right. there aren't really that many players where it matters that much for, where it's going to really make that huge of a difference. But Manu's definitely one of them.
Right. I think one of the problems with Manu is he's had such a singular career. Right, he had so much success even before he got to the NBA, and he had so much success, you know, internationally as for Argentina as well.
Yeah, I think there is definitely a case for him. I think it's tough. You know, I mean, it's tough for anybody to be on the list, but I do think There is a shot, but it's
where do you think he is in the shooting guards of his era? I think he's up there. Like, okay, so I think probably. Well, I don't want Kobe stands to come after me. I think Kobe Bryant is the shooting guard of his era.
Sure.
You know, culturally and you know, championship wise. But I think after him, you know, from the time Manu got in the NBA 2003 and, you know, he's still there now. I would say his prime probably ended in 2011. I think there are three great guards of that era. And he's one of them. It's Kobe, Dwayne Wade, and Ginobili. I think he belongs in that tier.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think he's one of the three. I think he's the third, but I do think he's one of the three. And I do think that, yeah, he's ahead. I mean, I would say way ahead of almost anyone else. I mean, there's Harden, but Harden's really only been in the last, you know, three, four years where you can really put him, you know, in the, you know, doesn't have the longevity that obviously the other guys have, but
right, and you have to give him some credit for inventing Harden.
Which is fair. I mean, yeah, I do think that there's the influence there. I mean, absolutely, you know, the Eurostep and, you know, and playing that role, you know, that Harden has taken to another level. I do think those things do matter. And
right, and I think what the way he plays is almost like the prototypical shooting guard for the modern NBA. Like, you have to be able to navigate the pick and roll. You have to be able to shoot the three, and you have to be able to pass the ball. I mean, everybody's got to be able to do that, but that's what you want out of your lead shooting guard now.
Sure. And you know, he also, you know, again, these in these top 50 lists, we may do it a bit differently, but the top two or three players in these dynasties or these long running great teams tend to get rewarded. You know, the Lakers have three, the 80s Lakers have three, the 80s Celtics have three, even the early 70s Knicks, you know, obviously the 60s Lakers. I mean, all these teams are rewarded. I mean, this winning and these championships are rewarded. There's something to it. I don't want to make too much of it, but I do think, you know, being a top two, top three player on a team that's won multiple championships and also just been incredibly awesome that entire time and, you know, been in the hunt for the championship for almost every season of that, that certainly means something.
Right. I think he was the best player in at least that Detroit Pistons finals. It's great that, you know, Tim Duncan obviously played great as well, but I think Manu really put them over the top in that series.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't win finals MVP, but I thought he was the best player.
Okay. Anything else?
You know, I just love the Manu swag. I think he deserves. I think he's such a fun player that, you know, he deserves whatever extra boost that to set off, you know, the small number of minutes he's played. He's such a fun player. He's had such a fun career. He's made so many great moments, you know, both in the playoffs and just in ordinary run of the mill games. He's capable of doing anything.
Yeah, and he caught a bat with his bare hands. So.
He did. How could I forget about him catching a bat with his bare hands? That's an all-time move right there.
It certainly is.
Absolutely. There's no other players PETA hates as much, I'm sure, in the NBA anyway.
Maybe Chris Kaman.
Maybe Chris Kaman.
Yeah.
I don't. He's not under consideration, is he?
He is not under consideration.
Okay.
No. We don't have to worry about Chris Kaman. No.
Manu can still lead that category.
Yes. Yes. So, well, Miles, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Jason.
And everyone, thanks for checking us out. You can find us at hardwardparoxysm.com. You can follow us on Twitter at OverAndBackNBA, on Facebook, the same page. And we also can find us at OverAndBackNBA.com. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back again soon.